Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy. Hey, folks, this is episode number 249, and this week we have Judd Fuller, Sandy Gennara, and Dana Radford from the Tummies. But before we get to them, we're talking about their album 930 Girl, and they'll tell how they got the name of that album and a little bit about some of the other stuff and their influences and stuff. But before that, our normal shenanigans. Bill, what you got?
Not music news, but interesting news. Screech died.
Yeah, I saw that.
Marilyn Manson. Dustin Diamond. Isn't that his name? Dustin Diamond?
Yeah. Dustin Diamond. Yeah, he had stage 4 lung cancer. That's pretty bad. That was 44 years old.
Yeah.
He'd been probably hitting something.
I don't know.
Remember that, people? When you put stuff in your lungs.
Porn. He did porn, too.
Well, yeah, he probably put stuff in there, too.
Ew.
Marilyn Manson's in trouble.
Marilyn Manson's in trouble,
He got kicked off his label.
He did.
And the two shows that he was just recently on, they're not going to show the repeats and the new ones. But
they probably shouldn't.
He's fucked.
Behaved any way close to how he behaved when he was here in Evansville year before last, then
he's a mess.
He had it coming.
He's a mess.
I know that, like, Alice Cooper is a shtick when he gets on stage.
It's shtick. He's a businessman.
After he's off stage, you never hear about any antics, right? I mean, you did back in the day periodically,
Well, you figure I'm 50 years old, Marilyn Manson or Brian Warner as his birth name is older than I am. You think he might act a little more like his age?
He's got demons and he's got issues and addictions and all kinds
of money. He's had money. Probably didn't have any money.
I don't think he's had money.
Be honest.
Just not a fan, so it doesn't matter. Whatever. Yeah. So
weird.
I don't think that one girl, she's not the only one that's come forth. I think
there's like seven.
Yeah,
I think five or seven or something. Like I read
there's a bunch of them.
There's been a few.
Bro, Raggy.
Hey,
real quick, talking about before we get into our albums and stuff, talking about what we're talking about tonight, the Tummies. This is interesting. I wish I'd known that Sandy was going to be on. I did, when we first did this interview, we had actually, you had what put out to Phil and Jeremy, wasn't it? Originally, Alan?
You cut out. Say that again.
I said you had originally had a shout out to Phil and Jeremy about the Tummies, originally, right? When we first talked about getting them on.
No.
Oh, I thought you did.
Reached out directly to the Tummies.
Okay.
Judd's the one that replied.
I just figured because we had talked to Phil and Jeremy so many times that's,
You figured it wrong.
Anyway, but I knew that Sandy was in the band, but I didn't know that Sandy was going to be tonight. And I would have did some little bit of research.
Now, Sandy has agreed to come on to the show later. So.
Right. And I hope so.
Do your research and be prepared.
Well, no, I. And
that'll
the
make
thing
one
is,
of us.
Well, what was funny was once he got off, I was like going, I got to check something because he had talked about being with Pat Travers. And he actually, the first Pat Travers album he did has my favorite Pat Travers song on there. If I'd have known that, I was like, I would have been talking about it. So that's
what song is that?
You may have to find out. No, actually, it was off the Valley Girl soundtrack. Does that help you?
No.
Did you ever see Valley Girl?
Yeah, but it was like 40 years ago.
Negative.
So as they drive,
that is not a movie I have watched twice.
Oh, see, I love that movie almost as much as I do Fast Times. But anyway, it's called the La La Love You song, and it's the first song on the album record that he did with them. And I was like, I can't believe Sandy played on it. That's a cool song. So anyway. That's not boom boom out those lights, but anyway,
we'll get to see him at the Rockin' Pod in August, which will be good.
And I'm off that Friday. I did get off that Friday, so now I don't have to show up at 8, 9-10 o'clock that night and miss half the party. So I'm going to be going early that day. So that'd be fun. Looking forward to that.
We'll probably be there at 8 because I'm not going to take off. I don't
think. You're not going to take off?
No.
I got to get a room or two. So anyway, check out that. It's on what?
RockinPodExpo.com.
There you go.
RockinPod.
So if you'd like to meet, if you'd like to meet us and maybe other podcasters and see some stars, and Jameson's going to be fun to hang out with. That's going to be fun. I'm kind of curious about that. Yeah. Come on, Bill.
Bill, that's Don Jameson.
Yeah, Don Jameson.
Okay. Well, see, when you say Jameson to me, totally different meaning.
He's picking up a fifth.
Yeah. It's a bottle this big, and it's green, and it's typically empty.
It's gonna be a fun time. It's gonna be a good, because we missed out last year, so it's gonna have to make up for 2 years worth in 1 year. So
lost time.
And the best part about it is they moved it a week earlier than they had planned to. So twofold. First of all, there's a podcast convention earlier in the week that wraps up on Thursday, so they can kind of intertwine everything, and they're trying to get those hooked up together. And number two, it is no longer on my wife's birthday weekend, so I don't have to feel guilty about screwing up another one of her birthdays.
So is it back also
move her birthday?
That's right.
So instead of being, remember they had a newer place this year. But we're going back to the same place we went last time.
No, it's not the Hilton.
This is at the Hilton Airport.
Well, what were you at last time? Was it Marriott?
Marriott, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
It's just so not the same place. And
it's not the same place.
I thought it was the same place. That was my fault. Okay. Anyway, but yeah, it's going to be a fun weekend. So looking forward to it.
Hopefully.
All right.
You got
albums?
I do. I have a couple.
Beaumonter.
So my lovely wife was at an antique store yesterday, the other day, and went, ooh, and then sent me a picture of a display.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went, oh, I need to go there after I get off the bike when I was at the gym. It was right down the street. So I went over there and came home with two records.
Why didn't you ride the bike down there? It's a stationary bike. Stationary bike.
It doesn't have wheels at all. So
gotcha. I'm just trying to be funny.
Anyway. I could have walked though, because it's only a couple blocks, but I just rode 15 miles. I'm not sure so I'm walking down there after doing that. I barely dragged my ass back to get my stuff out of the gym. Anyway, so I bought two records. You'll think this is interesting. Okay. I bought the Eagles Greatest Hits Volume 2.
Oh, that's good. Good album.
On the back of this, it says excellent condition. I would say that's probably an understatement.
Right.
Still has a shrink on it. And
wow.
When I took it out of the sleeve, it had the dust of a new record all over the sleeve.
Cool.
You know, on the record. So if it's played, it might have been played like twice.
Wow.
And the interesting thing is, book broker, listen up.
Oh,
do you see where's this?
There's no sticker.
There's no price tag. Oh,
yeah,
it's on the back.
Yeah, no shit. That's where it should be.
Oh, and you can just peel it right off. Isn't amazing.
That's what he doesn't want.
So this is in great shape. I actually got it for the same price I saw it listed on Discogs. So
good
deal.
Good deal.
And I am not a huge U2 fan, but I am somewhat of a U2 fan. And for those of you that don't know it, I got this, and this is an authentic thing, but it is a autographed U2 thingamajigger that I got last year.
Right.
Somebody gave it to me.
Yeah.
So I accepted it. But I got Joshua Tree. And on the back of it says new unplayed condition.
Huh.
And again, when I opened it and pulled the record out, it was the same as the other one. I don't think either one of these records have been played very much. And it still has the original shrink, still has the original hype.
Awesome.
And again, I paid just what Discogs had listed. And the sticker is on the back.
Well, good. So, I know. I wish those were.
Just saying.
Interesting.
Just saying.
Well, I got some from Bookburger, but I got the stickers off of them. I got the razor blade thing down, and actually the stickers are in this cup. It tells you either. So, is that all you got?
Yep.
Okay. So, my shit goes from one spectrum to the other this week. So here.
Cool.
All right. Got a little air supply now and then.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Or now and forever, sorry. It's got now and forever. Even the nights are better. Got that for $3.
I can't believe you didn't know the
$3
title of that album.
I know.
It's sad.
It's really good shape, $3. The one that you love, Air Supply. Somebody got rid of their Air Supply collection. But anyway,
do you know that Lisa and I went to see them in at Mesker?
Right.
It's July 4th.
Right.
Probably 1983.
Right.
Most likely.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, real good shape again, $3. Bookbroker. But I did get the thing. So somebody has some really goofy stuff. That's why I bought it. So I got Survivor Premonition.
Yeah, I don't have that one.
Nothing really good on it. I don't really know. Chevy Nights. Summer Nights.
Does that have
and Runway Lights? That's
who's the lead singer on that one?
He does not
name a name.
It does not say.
The names aren't listed on there.
No, they're not listed.
On okay, here. All right. Because there was a record.
Here, hold on. Sorry. David Bickler.
No.
Leads vocals.
No.
Jim Pittery.
Jim Jameson.
No. Frankie Sullivan, Mark Dorbrey.
Yeah. That's all right. You can stop naming names. So that's the record that after the original lead singer that did Eye of the Tiger and then
the second
record left.
You know that guy who did Eye of a Tiger? He lives in Evansville. Do you know that?
The lead singer?
Yeah.
Oh.
And he actually did some recording over at Drosty's here recently.
Over at Drosty's? The jewelry shop?
Yeah, he had a studio upstairs and that caught fire. Anyway, here's another survivor caught in the game. That's a promotional only copy. So that's kind of
yeah.
But you know they were $3 a piece.
That's great, man.
I went ahead and grabbed them. What the hell? Ultra Club.
I picked that up and looked at it and went no.
Kissing to Be Clever. I mean, what the hell? You know, it was $5. So I went ahead and bought it. It's in real good shape. So now getting to the meat and the potatoes here. I did pick up
Excess.
Wait, it's kind of funny. You didn't say get into the meat and potatoes when you're holding the
Yeah, no kidding.
The other record.
So anyway, except Too Mean to Die. I love this album. This is I got this off of Amazon. This was
Is it new stuff?
Yes. This is the one that just came out last week. This is pressed on orange and splatter vinyl, limited to 2,000 copies. Really, it's on two albums. It's fucking awesome. I mean, it sounds really good. I even put on there Phil Schaus and Christopher Williams. I kind of did it.
I saw that.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. Great album. I mean, I've been listening to it. It's super, super good. Love it. You can get that off of Amazon. Here's the one that I got off the auction here the other night, and just got it from New York. This is I got Skid Row.
Oh, yeah.
Now this is. I know you always want the get the originals, but this is not the original. This is the one that was out on Record Day. On purple vinyl, but it's got it's not been opened. It's shrink wrapped. Discogs. The cheapest one I can find on Discogs is $67. I paid less than that, so I'm not gonna open it up.
Paid $66.
No, I paid $40. I paid $49 for it.
Woo!
But it's $67 is the cheapest one I can find.
You can pay $49 for the OG, man.
I know.
Why would you not get the OG?
I don't know. I got caught up in the auction. So anyway,
drunk on auction.
So anyway, that's what I got. So anyway, that's my then those two records, actually that Skid Row and that damn Dio, was $100 plus two records, and that was like going to be my month's worth.
Dio,
I got that. Yeah, remember last
week?
Yeah, when you got me all pissed off about the blue Dio vinyl that I got. Anyway,
I wasn't pissed off about it.
But the rest of them, I got all the other ones for like $3, except for the Culture Club. It was $5, but so I went cheap, went dumpster diving. I got some cheap albums. But anyway, they're albums. I ain't gonna worry about it. So yeah, that's what I got. And
they had Born in the USA.
Nah, I'm not gonna get by that.
When I was looking at I like a couple of songs in there, but I'm not a big Springsteen fan.
Only Springsteen when I
I'm a tummy fan.
Yeah. Oh, you know, is that the segue?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Here's the only Springsteen I got, is that live.
Yeah.
Live record one. But yeah, I'm not buying any of that shit.
I think he's overrated.
He's, you think? I know. But you know who's not overrated?
The Tummies.
All right, folks, we have got Judd Fuller and Sandy. What's your last name?
Gennaro. Like the feast.
That's the unprofessional part. We have idea who's on the screen.
It's even on the screen.
If I know what's on the screen, but if I think I'm going to mispronounce it,
there you go.
And then we also have Dana Radford. And of course, Dennis and Bill and Alan. So, how are you guys doing?
All is good.
Well, let me say that again.
Did you mention Judd Fuller?
He was the first one I mentioned. He's the only one that I knew his full name.
Right. I was concentrating on my last name. That's okay.
That's right. So we have here 3/5 of the band, the Tummies, from Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, what's up with the other 2/5? They couldn't figure out how to get on here. They've been on, like, it's not like they've not been on here before. Like
400 times.
Yeah, 50 times. I don't know.
Popular today.
Yeah. They said that.
That's okay. Well, hey, we would rather have you guys on anyway. There.
That's right.
We're happy to be here.
You know, it's like, you know, there's no shame in the game in being a B-list celeb. You know? No shame in
it. Yeah, we'll tell Phil and Jeremy that. The B-listers just, you know, whatever.
I'm happy to be on any list.
Yeah.
I'm on a list. My wife
has
list.
A list. No, that, damn it, Bill.
That has a honeydew list.
Yeah, I stay on the shit list.
There you go.
Well, I have a habit of not telling my wife when I'm taking the week off so that she doesn't pull out that honeydew list.
Good idea.
Wow. I have to get approval. That's pretty amazing.
Oh, not me. I just like, by the way, I'm off this week. See you tomorrow, or see you when you get home from work. So anyway, you guys recently, I say you guys and the gal.
You can say released, you. I'm one of the guys.
I'm just going to say y'all, because I am from Kentucky. So
there you go.
The Tummies, 930 Girl. This was released late last year. You guys want to talk about it? No.
Sure. Where do we even start? This project was a long time in the making. We started writing for the project in 15. We got the band together in early 16, and we chipped away at our stone, kept writing ixnade songs that we'd recorded, and finally came up with the final 930 Girl project, and continue.
What she said.
We worked. I don't want to even say the words labor of love, because we absolutely love to write songs. And, you know, Juddy and I are the sole songwriters of the project. And then the boys come in and just make their magic, which is unbelievable. And it took years. It took us, it was an idea. And we played a bunch of live shows. And then we started recording, and next thing we knew, it was like 4 years later and the album was finished. And then Nashville had a tornado, and then COVID, and then the record was on hold. So hence the reason why it's taken us a while to get the record out, but I believe timing is everything. And so here we are in 2021, ready for the world with the Tummies.
I think it's awesome how we all came together. I mean, Judd was in the Rock and Roll Residency house band, and Dana used to sit in. And then when I moved to Nashville, I sat in with them. And of course, Jeremy and Phil were already in the house band with Judd. And one day we got a call, me, Jeremy, and Phil got a call from Dana and Judge saying, hey, we got a project with our material. You want to come over, listen to some songs? And if you agree to be in the project, we'd love it. So we went over and had some wine and cheese and listened to some demos. They were just basically Judd played
acoustic. We auditioned for you. We played live, silly monk.
Well, that's what I mean. You played live for us. Judd was on acoustic guitar.
We auditioned for you three. That's what we did.
That's okay.
Yeah,
okay.
The story goes on. Sandy's trying to make it like all nice and shit, but it really was. It was like Judd and I said, okay, who's our dream band? And we're like, okay, so dream band, Phil, obviously Jer, and then obviously Sandy, and you and me, we got the band. And like, well, do you think they'd want to be in like our band? So we like, let's have them over. Let's feed them lots of wine and let's play for them. And at that point, I think we probably had about 8 to 10 songs already written. And so we sat in front of them and said, we'd like to audition for you guys to see if you'd like to be in our band. So Judd and I sat in the dining room, played guitar, and Judd was so polite. He only like wanted to play 30, 40 seconds of each song. And I'm like, no, damn it, we're playing the whole song. And then like the boys were like, yeah, this is really fun. And we're all having a good time. And I said, go ahead, go home, think about it. Put it in your pipe, smoke it. Let us know what your thoughts are. And in sequence, Phil goes, I'm in. Jeremy goes, I'm in. I don't ever think Sandy about it. And one. Sandy goes, I want to be a tummy too. That's what happened that night.
And then, now basically, you know, basically that judgment by the three of us to be in the band was based on a Judd's acoustic guitar and Dana's live vocal. It wasn't no classy, garage band demo or anything. It was like the real live thing. And just based on that, the hooks and It just reminded me of feel good. Oh, there goes my music stand. It reminded me of feel good music, and that's why I did it.
I love that.
Aside from the fact that I love these people personally.
Yes.
My heart was so full that night, Sandy. I was just like, yes, we have a band. No. And it was like the band that we handpicked. It was like, what's our magic band? It was like, eeny, meeny, miny. It was like, and.
Can I talk now? Thank you. Now, there's a subtext to this in that. The reason these guys were our dream band is because we realized their love of Merseybeat, the Beatles, Liverpool, that kind of rock and roll.
That is true.
You know, they Sandy, Phil, and Jer had have a passion for that stuff. You know, we could have hired some guys who could play guitar or play drums. And of course, these guys can do it all and then some, but they understood where we were coming from.
Absolutely.
And so to us, it was like, and to this day, I have to be honest, I wouldn't want to, I can't do it with anyone else.
This band wouldn't be the Tummies with any other personnel. It just wouldn't. We've talked about it so often and it's just like, it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't be the representation of the Tummies. It's like, no one is replaceable in this band. It's the band is exactly what we need it to be. And it's so insanely fulfilling for us. We feel I'm so motivated to write and to keep going forward and to keep just more. That's all we want to do. We just want the record out and just the world to know us and write more songs so that we can get back in the studio with our best friends. And there's nothing more beautiful and charming than making music with the people that you love. I mean, and I think it really shows in our project, not to mention Caleb Sherman, who is our engineer and producer at his house. The love that we have for him. I mean, it comes out in the music. It just does. It's happy. And I just feel like it's just happy and beautifully executed and made with love.
You know, the thing I like about this band is to pick up on what Dana just said is that there are personal relationships over and above the love for the particular type of music. And there's a mutual respect with everybody. There's no leader. There's no,
totally.
You know, we're all given the freedom to create parts and there's a honest feedback and it's all out of respect for the human being. And it is, you know what I mean? It's a very rare thing. I've been involved in a lot of projects and, That's a rare, rare thing for the full circle, the full complement of everybody on that stage or in that studio having a mutual respect all 2020. It grows out of a personal respect for and a love for one another. Exactly what Dana said.
I agree, Sandy. I agree. It's like the feeling and the just the sharing, how we share. You know. Yes. I'm so sorry. Someone else, please feel free.
No.
The cool part about doing this, about being able to do this and have this opportunity for us, I think, is to hear these kind of stories, because from our side, at least from my side, the only time I've seen all of you guys together is at the Rock and Roll Residency show, but you can tell from that show. And actually I think the only show that I made it to was the final show. I think that's the only show that I was able to make it to. I'm in Indiana, but, you can tell by when you guys all get on stage together that there's just a camaraderie there that we as fans and not in that same arena really don't know. Are you guys just up there hanging out? Is it really kind of a, you know, what's the vibe really truly like?
Well, but
I can tell you from that night, that night that we saw the final show, that is probably, and I think these other guys will tell you the same thing, that might be one of the best shows I've ever seen. And I've been to probably 400 plus concerts. That show was freaking incredible. So the fact that you guys are all friends and the fact that you guys are all able to get together and put together something like you did, it just makes it that much better. So thank you on behalf of us.
Thank you.
Well, thank you guys. And I also want to say Alan was the one who reached out to us. And honestly, I was very, very flattered that you did. I was actually kind of humbled. I'm like, because I know you guys know and have spoken to a lot of, you know, pretty big names in the industry. And I was like, my gosh, he wants to talk to us.
To the tummies. Tummy talking.
Well, go ahead, Alan.
You go ahead, Dennis.
No, I might be taking something away from you. Go ahead. In case you're going to. Well, I was going to say.
Think Dennis and I were going to say the same thing. How did you come up with the name the Tummies?
There you go. That was exactly what I was going to say. We hear the name Tummies spoken a lot with you three. How did that name come about? It's kind of it's different.
Yeah. Okay. It sure is.
I can speak to that.
Yes, you can.
It actually happened a very, very long time ago in the mid 90s when I was touring with another band. And one of my dearest friends, Joe Bakubian, was playing guitar in that band. And we had sort of just, you know, during the long, interminable waiting hours between gigs and sound checks and everything, we would just write stupid stuff. And it almost came about like, it was almost like a Sesame Street thing. So I have to credit Joe Bakubian and myself with coming up with that name. A long time ago. It never, you know, came into fruition, but the concept was born. It's like, what about a goofy, like, sort of band?
And then we got beagles for dogs, and we started singing silly little songs, making up songs and going, oh, that sounds like a Tummies tune. And we would sing songs to the dogs and come up with these little ditties and always make reference that, oh, it's a Tummies song. We're singing them a little Tummies tune.
Yeah,
so it was always in our vocabulary that these little ditties, these fun little ditties were like our little made up band, the Tummies. And today we don't have a made up band, the Tummies. And we're really a band now.
Yeah, because it was sort of writing those goofy, as Sandy once described them, one tune, Sandy, I believe you described almost as a nursery rhyme.
Right.
And you know, there's an innocence. We wanted to get away from the overthinking, paralysis by analysis songwriting, just like pick up your fucking guitar and play like fucking Paul and John Wood in 1963. And then you give them the fact that you have four dogs sitting around in the living room, and like one is like licking its balls, the other one wants dinner, and we're just going, oh, he's licking his balls and he wants dinner.
Yeah, and then that's how it happened.
That's how it happened. literally.
That's literally our magic.
Shit you not.
Yep, that's our magic.
The best songs we have written have taken about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Those are always the best songs because they don't suffer from over analysis. Exactly. Paralysis by over analysis. There you go.
Analysis by paralysis by analysis.
Right.
By the way, Sandy, that was Keith Hernandez said that.
Well, you hear that? Paralysis by analysis.
He was talking about like hitters who are in a slump. Sorry, Sandy and I are big baseball fans.
No, I was listening to the album today. I actually bought it off Bandcamp, and so there you go. And I got it yesterday, and I've been listening to it. And the good thing about it, man, you know, with the shitty year that we just went through, and all the crap that we've dealt with, and all the you know just everything, it's good to hear music that just wants to make you smile. I mean, it's just happy tunes, and I tell you, I was listening to it, and it's just like I said, it's one of those things you can't help but smile, you know. And it's just like you're listening to it, and like you said, they're not, you know, you're not trying to solve big mysteries, and there's always, it's just, they're fun songs to listen to. You don't have to think about it; just enjoy, you know.
Try putting those songs on first thing in the morning, and you'll be hopping to the bathroom.
And you know what? I tell you what, I was dry, and I was just almost getting home. I've been to the doctor. I've got a really bad, and I wasn't flipping you off, but I got a real bad swelling in my, I've got something going on with my hand, and I've been miserable, and I was listening to that on the way home. It's like, you're just kind of bringing me out of my funk. But I tell you what, my favorite is Honey on the Hill. It is a simple, and I just love that song. I mean, it's just, I'm sitting here listening to it. I'm like, I don't want it to kick in. I just want it to keep going. And I'm like going, how clever is this? It's just a really nice song. Right. I love that song.
There's a good story
behind it, dude.
I want to hear it.
Oh, it's such a great story.
So over yonder on our refrigerator, we have a little mini blackboard where we write the grocery list, you know, shopping. Now, Dana's dad is named Hilliard. But his, you know, his,
we call him for Hill. Short, his name Hill. Is Hill. So dad's name is Hill.
So he would come down, and visit from Canada and his brother, correct?
No, it was, another blah, blah, blah. Another friend who had,
raised bees and made delicious organic honey. So the next time Hill was going to visit, Dana wrote a reminder, honey from Hill.
On the chalkboard.
And so I would wake up every morning, bleary-eyed, making coffee, looking at the fridge, go, honey from Hill, honey from the hill.
And that's just how it happened.
And that's exactly how it happened. So I just I came up with that phrase, honey from the hill, and I sat down and I envisioned, whether intentionally or not, I couldn't tell you, but I was imagining Paul McCartney's first solo record, the Cherry Bowl record. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it to sound like that.
Right.
So I greased up my rusty finger picking moves on acoustic and came up with that in about 3 minutes.
Yep. And that's it. And we knew we wanted to end the record with that song.
Well, I tell you what, I like it. And I say it's my favorite tune on the record. Just because it's just so simple. It's simplistic, you know.
It's like It's like the Tummy's version. Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl.
Yeah,
that's exactly why we ended the record with that.
Right.
It's kind of ironic because the three of us rarely ever agree on one single song.
Right.
And its placement. And it's funny that Dennis said that, and then Alan agreed. And I was going to say that was my favorite song on the record too.
That's cool.
It never happens. I mean, we are at polar opposites.
Usually it's like, oh, you're stupid. You know,
what the hell are you listening to? And
that's Judge. It's funny. All by himself. No.
That's so funny.
Not with any little help from his friends on that track. That's for sure.
Yeah. Pun intended.
Exactly.
I should add that a lot of the reason that this goes on is because my family, my mother's side of the family, my mother, born and raised in Liverpool, England. And so all my cousins used to go to see them play at the Cavern Club in the early 60s. And so when she eventually emigrated over here, she married a fellow who had flown 29 successful missions for the US Air Force. And they settled in New York City. And so my sister had all these original vinyl Beatle records. And I remember being 4 years old and through the walls of her bedroom, I was hearing her play these Beatles records. So it just got into my DNA deeply. I'm not sure if that's relevant or not. It was kind of a cool moment, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
It's
sorry, are you guys all in Nashville?
We're all in Nashville, yeah.
We're living in Nashville. We're from different places, but we're living here now.
Right, yeah. It's surprising to me. I mean, since we've been doing this, we've just been shocked by how many. I mean, we know that a lot of people live in Nashville. I mean, we know a lot of artists live in Nashville. It's just how many people have moved to Nashville from other places in the last few years, you know, even 5 to 10 years that you really wouldn't have expected, you know. A lot of the 80s rock guys and stuff like that we would have never expected to live there and stuff like that. So it's really pretty cool. I mean, it's neat that there's just so much. There's always, you know, you always hear that there's so much talent in Nashville, but you always think about country talent. And that's not it. I mean, it's there's so much more. I can't wait to get back to where we can start going to shows and stuff again, to be able to come down and hear you guys play. And we miss it bad. I'm telling you, I know you guys miss it. I know you do, because it's your lifeblood and it's, you know, that's how you put food on the table and that kind of stuff. And I get that, but the fans just miss that as much as you do. I mean, I think all of our last shows was in March of last year.
In Nashville.
Yeah. There's where Nashville mine was, but yeah.
Yep. Do you guys know Sandy's story? Does everybody know Sandy's?
I'd love to hear Sandy's story.
Yeah. Sandy, tell them your story, babe.
Sandy's
Sandy's
got more cred
than anybody. Yeah. Sandy,
that'll give me a chance to get a beer. Anybody want one?
I would love one. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go grab one in a second after I tell my story. It'll take 2 minutes.
Tell your story, Sam. It's the best.
Basically, I started out in a band called Blackjack, which this was in 1979 with Michael Bolton, as he was known at the time. Bruce Kulick played guitar and Jimmy Haslip played bass. That was my first project. My second project was, and we were produced by Tom Dowd. If you read the back of albums in the 70s, you know who he is. My second project was Benny Mardonis's record. It was an album called Never Run, Never Hide. And off of that album came a top 10 single called Into the Night. It was one of the only singles that was top 10 on two different occasions, 10 years apart. Then I was with the Pat Travers Band, the original incarnation of the Pat Travers Band in the late 70s, early 80s. After the Pat Travers Band, I went on the road with Cyndi Lauper, did her first tour of the world, basically, in support of her first album. I joined her band when nobody knew who she was, and then 5 months later, it was 5 million records later.
Wow. That's such a cool story.
Go ahead, Dana, I'm sorry.
No, keep going. No, I'm admiring your story, babe.
Well, after that, after the Cyndi Lauper Band, I went to Europe. I did a German band named Kraft, C-R-A-A-F-T. I did their record in Frankfurt in late 85, early 86. In the summer of 86, I did the tour. They asked me to do a tour in support of that record. And we opened for Queen for 3 months in 1986.
Wow.
The summer of 86. It was awesome.
Sandy?
Yeah.
You look a little different than you do on this record.
That was that. Oh, it looks like I have a... Hold that up to the screen again. A little over this way. It looks like I have the shadow of the ghost of Gene Simmons over my shoulder there.
You do.
Anyway, that's an album called Worlds Apart, and that was the second Blackjack album.
Yeah, this one, you look a little better on this one.
He's got the first one there.
Yeah, I don't know if you can see this one or not. There you go. Oh,
that's amazing.
That's the album that was produced by Tom Dowd. And the funny thing about that cover, it opens up from the top like a deck.
Yeah, course. It's cool.
No kidding.
So after that tour with Queen, I toured with the Monkees in 1987. I did their first reunion tour. And then 88, 89, I was with Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. And then early 90s, I joined Johnny Winter's band. And then sprinkled in between there was numerous Monkee reunion. I did almost every Monkee reunion tour from 87 until Davy Jones died in 2012. Wow. And then after that, I did some of Mickey Dolan's solo shows. Before Davy died, I did some of his solo shows. And then came Bo Diddley. I was Bo Diddley's musical director for a couple of years, and I played the last with Bo Diddley. Part of that time was a musical director, but I played with him the last 5 years of his career, which is like, this is a major highlight of my career. Just to share the stage and share a tour bus with that guy was just awesome.
Wow.
And so that was that. And then I went back in 2010, I went back with the Pat Travers Band, and from 2010 to 2015. Then 2014, I moved to Nashville. And shortly thereafter, I met Judd and Dana and Jeremy and Philip, and because the Travers Band did a Kiss cruise, and they were on the Kiss cruise in a band called the Big Rock Show.
With Brian Cook.
And that's how I originally met Jeremy and Dana, because they were fans of the Travers Band, and they were right in front of the stage in all their Halloween outfits on the Kiss cruise.
No, I wasn't there. You said Jeremy and Dana. I wasn't there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jeremy and Philip. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I wasn't. So, was I there? No, I wasn't, Sam.
Sorry. But Jeremy, Philip, and Hannah and all the girl, you know, they were all dressed up in the Halloween outfits. It was funny. So basically that brings me up to the present point. And then do a little motivational speaking. I taught drums at the Drummers Collective in New York for 27 years before I moved to Nashville. That was my day job. And
you've done a couple things then, right?
I did a couple
of things. Dude, I'm exhausted, man. I'm absolutely lazy.
What a resume. It makes me feel like I'm a little, it's like, man, I thought I was doing pretty good.
I have to tell you guys, so my story with Sandy Gennaro is I lived in New York City from 1991 through 03. And my best girlfriend in New York, her name was Lydia Lascalzo. And she used to always say to me, oh my God, I've got to hook you up with my cousin Sandy. But Sandy was always on tour. I never, ever, ever got to meet Sandy in all the years, in the 12 years I lived in New York. And then within the first year that Sandy is in Nashville, I meet him and I'm like, oh my God, you're Sandy Gennaro. I tried to meet you for 12 years in New York. Like, I tried so hard, but you were always on tour. And Lydia would always give me an update. Sandy's doing this, Sandy's doing that, Sandy's doing this. And I'm like, when do I get to meet Sandy? And then the day that I met Sandy, we sent Lydia a picture and she's like, finally! So
it's crazy
small world situation.
So Sandy, when we do finally actually get to meet, I'm going to bring these with me so you can sign them.
You got it.
Awesome, man.
Wasn't you, Sandy, didn't you go to the Rockin' Pod?
Yeah, I did one of those.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought he was there.
The first one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought I had seen you before in person.
There was one of the Nelson brothers were there.
That
was the first one.
And that storefront there.
Yeah.
By the
Nashville Palace.
The best part about the Nelson brother that was there is he would take selfies with anybody that wanted to take one, but he would take your phone and he would take the picture. You weren't allowed to take it.
Damn it. I have one of those.
Yeah, he had the whitest teeth I ever seen in my life. He was like, they'd almost like glow in the dark. They were crazy.
Was that Gunner?
I think it was Gunner.
Yeah, it was Gunner. Nice guy, though. Nice guy.
Oh, no, I think we met him.
Yeah, we met him at
some
a party.
Jam session. We hung out. They were super cool.
Super dude. Lovely.
Yeah. No, he was a nice guy.
Yeah. It was funny because somebody wasn't at their table when they were supposed to be. And he's just like, I'm just going to go somewhere else. It doesn't matter. And he just walks off. He was like, don't have time for this.
Michael Wagner. Was Michael Wagner at that? Rock,
yep.
Record?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And Mark was Slaughter.
The first one?
Mark Slaughter was there. And,
yeah.
And like I said, it was kind of our introduction to the people in Nashville and made a lot of good friends. I know Christopher Williams was there. We talked to him and got to be good friends with him. And then, of course, that got, you know, we met a lot of people through him too, and yeah, it's been fun. Like I said, we've made a lot of friends down there over the last 5 years. You know,
there's a bunch of good people in this town.
Just, and they're super nice people. I mean, they're very. You know, you think, oh my gosh, you know, they're not going to talk. You know, they love. They're just normal. Everybody's. You guys are all normal. That's what's so cool.
Dennis is not normal.
No. I'm way from normal.
So getting back to this album. one thing that I noticed, you know, and it's already been brought up about the Beatles influence. I noticed that I could hear some of the Monkees in there. I could hear a little bit of surf rock in there. I even heard a little bit of country music in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yes. The name 930 Girl, what does that have a story, or is it just?
Yes, it has a great story, a really fun story. For a while, Dana would wake up every morning at 9:30. She's the best sleeper I've ever met in my life. She'd just be like, go, and 9:30 would come. She'd be like, oh, I'm awake. And I go, and I remember remarking to her, my God, you wake up consistently every morning at 9:30. And she goes, yes, I'm a 9:30 girl. And I went, give me my fucking guitar. Literally, that's it. And what's weird is that I had this vision in my head as I'm like sitting there writing, and I'm going like, do you remember the,
that
for
girl.
Those of us of a certain age will remember the sitcom That Girl with Marlo, right. Sort of a working girl in New York City finding her way. Yeah. And I was like, every morning. And so I had this vision of just this confident Bobby Doo, or whatever you call it, whoop-de-doo. just walking down the street, heading to her job, and then some, not a schlubby guy, but a guy who made, just sitting on his doorstep, and she's just giving him the eye, and he goes, how you doing? And it just, it became this story just concocted from the fact that she said, I'm a 930.
I'm a 930 girl.
And that's it. So yep. It came. And I thought, I was thinking Beach Boys meets, I don't know if you guys are familiar with a band called NRBQ.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember.
Oh, you guys need to dig into
Sandy that. Sandy was in that band too.
No.
Then we should have played a game tonight. Guess what band Sandy's not been in?
But anyway, that's the story behind that song. She just said, "I'm a 9:30 girl," and I just guitar. See ya.
Yeah, that's how it happened. That's how all these songs happen.
Just we say something.
We say something, and it just turns into the song. That's how we write songs.
I thought the 20 after 10 was kind of unique.
That's another one.
And it literally was 20 after 10. And we had drank all the wine.
We were hammered.
And we said like English, like English church ladies.
Well, it was sort of, you know, again, like as Sandy brought up, like the sort of Her Majesty thing, it was kind of like just one of those weird Beatley concepts. But the way it happened was we had been up writing songs and getting hammered on wine, and we were like seeing double, and Dana goes, it's 20 after 10, we must go to bed.
We've drunk all the wine.
And I went, give me my guitar.
it wrote itself. Was like 30 seconds. We didn't even have to think about it. It's just
the song is 30 seconds. It took 2 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
I know, it's silly.
Hey, that silly is great. Yeah.
Don't
take yourself too seriously. None of us are getting out of this alive.
That's right.
Yeah, there's too much of that going on.
Right.
I'm sorry. What'd you say, Bill?
I said there's way too much of that. Alan said, don't take yourself too seriously. And I was like, yeah, there's way too much of that going on.
I know. We're really excited. When we put this record out, you know, 2020 was a tough year for 98.9% of the world. So we decided that we weren't going to do a slit your wrist quarantine record. So everyone was like in their studio because everyone was home, everyone had time. And that's the exact opposite of what we did. We like made joyous, very fun music. We did not go down the dark rabbit hole. We got down the rabbit hole, but kept digging and was just like found the light at the other end. We just had fun writing and, you know, just making just 2020 was good for us musically, you know?
And to Dana's point, you know, in terms of like, you know, darkness and we had been wanting to do that 6 years ago, because to me, as Sandy has pointed out, you know, like the feel good music, that sort of thing. I was finding the sort of music scene, because there's so much information out there, being kind of diluted. And I sort of hearken back to my childhood, what made me happy, what made me get up off the couch and dance or whatever. And I was like, I wanted to just recapture that even before all the this weird stuff happened. So it's been a work in progress. And it's, to me, and if you dig into that band NRBQ, as Sandy knows, they have always been like that. Just like, let's celebrate the music. Let's celebrate being together. And it's like, I don't know. I get sentimental about it, I guess. But for the past 6 years, I want to make music that just makes people smile. That's it.
And I want to.
I'm wrong with that.
That makes us happy. And you know, like for years and years and years, I was a jingle singer in New York. And you know, Judd played with Rodney Atkins for years and played country music. And it's like, you know, we've always kind of been the hired kids. And, you know, finally we have like our band and it's our favorite band. And it's like, we finally get to do what we want to do. You know, it's, you know, granted, I loved being able to be a singer for a living and making money as a hired singer. And that's great. But it is such a reward to be able to have your own band that you absolutely love and with the people that you love and to just, and it brings joy. You know, I feel like everybody that listens to the record or everybody that has seen us play live or anybody that has supported us has been touched by the, you know, the happy tummy kiss.
So what you guys is playing, are you going to be, I'm sorry, Sandy, go ahead.
Oh,
I thought Sandy said something. I was just going to say, so what's your plan then whenever things start opening up and people can start getting back out again? Are you just going to start around Nashville going that way? Or are you going to take it on the road for a while? I mean, what's your plan? I know you've got with Jeremy and Phil, you know, they've got, I'm sure, dates with Ace whenever that comes up. And then of course, Phil with Accept when, you know, that starts back up again.
That's a good question. Cause I also have a touring gig with an artist named Maggie Rose. Who's
wow.
So I have to like keep that in mind as my day job.
Sure.
Most fantastic. She's an incredibly talented artist.
And so much fun.
And the band is great. So basically our plan is to just, it's funny because, you know, you can, again, it gets back to paralysis by analysis. What are we going to do? And what we want to do is just keep recording our songs and putting them out there. And just by doing that, we already have this weird small following in Europe.
A band camp, beautiful thing. Yeah, I mean, people are downloading the album in Japan, Spain, and in Italy. Germany. And
we haven't done anything to promote
it. We've done nothing yet. I mean, the vinyl is being shipped from Prague as we speak. We've got the CDs right now.
Ellen got one.
And people all over the world have, yeah, thanks, Alan. People all over the world have like found us already without even doing anything. Like our new friend, is it Michael in Hawaii?
Yeah, we've been played on terrestrial radio in Hawaii. Wow. Like program director. And then our friend Joaquin in Madrid, Spain, who owns a small independent record store, just ordered CDs.
Yeah, called Rock and Roll Circus. He said he's our number one fan and he wanted to sell our CD in his store.
In Madrid.
Which, I'll take it.
Give us a week-long residency in Madrid, right, Sandy?
Fun stuff is just happening.
An Italian music blog named our record one of the top 20 records
top 50 records of 2020.
And there's another thing,
just crazy stuff is happening, like, and we haven't done anything yet. Like the album is not, we
haven't officially dropped
it. We haven't even really like released it in America. Like it's just up on Bandcamp. That's what's
crazy.
All of this stemmed from just the Bandcamp link,
and a small label in New Jersey
wanted to sign us,
and they're selling it. Actually, they've agreed to distribute some copies. So we're not doing anything. We're just like putting the music vibes out.
We're just sunshine and roses. Just sunshine and roses, and things are coming to us.
Pink hair.
Well, you said you haven't officially released anything yet. That brings me to another question. You know, because I told you that I was going to play you on my internet radio station. Are you going to release any specific songs as singles, or are you going to have an official release date for this album?
We have an official release date for the record on all the streaming and everything, blah, 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 Feb 26th. But at this point, I don't know this game, man. The last time I sold records was out of the back of a van on tour. So for original stuff, I've been a sideman for many years. So I'm not sure what to do. So if you want to play it, I mean, could it hurt?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just say more is more is more.
Just say, hey, you know, be like WNEW back in the 70s. Hey, in 3 weeks, the new Stones record, but we got a sneak peek. I don't know.
Yeah.
There you go.
Are you cool with that, Alan?
I'm cool with playing anything off the album you want.
Hey, I love it. Well, pick a favorite. You know, we just released a video that we shot in the studio at Caleb Sherman's at Cygnus Sound, which was
what got my attention.
We shot it live, and there's nothing more fun than shooting a video live with this cast of characters because it was one take every time. So the cameraman shot Phil for a take, shot Sandy for a take, shot Jer for a take, and then shot me and Juddy for a take, and literally just cut it all together. And there's our live video. It was absolutely. I mean,
we got the actual take in about two takes, but because it was a one camera shoot, we had to fake it five times.
Well, he had to shoot everybody individually so that he could splice it all together.
But the take is an actual.
But the take is an actual one take. And wow, was that ever fun? And Sandy, I don't know if Judd said this to you, but he thinks he wants to make the next record that way. It's like, make a record live. Like, has anyone done that lately? Like, live in the studio? Like, as opposed to live on a big stage? Like, I mean, it just sounds kind of fun. We really enjoy
it. So, you know, as opposed to, you know, for a first video for a single or for a song, as opposed to lip syncing and looking like we're recording it, but we're actually listening to the original recorded version. We cut the track again live.
Yeah.
And then we did that in two takes, like Judd said. And then they shot Phil.
Yeah.
Playing to what we just record, what all of us recorded. So it's the live take that you hear as a soundtrack to that video, similar to what Cyndi Lauper did with Money Changes Everything.
Really?
We
didn't know that.
Yeah, we were on tour doing that during that first big tour, and Money Changes Everything was the fifth single off that record. Now, being that she wanted to do a live video, but as opposed to us in a live concert arena setting, explaining to the audience, like a lot of bands do, hey, we're going to do a video, and you hear the countdown, and then the track, the album track starts playing, and then the band on stage lip syncs to the album track for that one song, and they record different videos. But Cyndi wanted the audio track for Money Changes Everything to be our live performance because she loved that band so much.
Awesome.
So what she did was she had a vision and she said, I want to go up in a garbage can over the Summit Auditorium in Houston, suspended by cables. And everybody says, Cyndi, you're crazy. How are we going to do that? Oh, we'll find a way. And long story short, they found NFL Films came in and rigged up the garbage can with some cables with a production crew, and then it was the first time NFL Films used the camera on a cable, the remote camera that they operate with a joystick, like you do over when you see during an NFL playoff game when the camera's over the huddle or whatever. Yeah. It's like it's on four cables and the camera. So anyway, that was the first time NFL Films was involved in a rock video. So the result was we shot one version at Soundcheck doing all the close-up shots in our stage clothes. When we took a break, obviously we had dinner. And then during the show, when Money Changes Everything was on the list, okay, now we're going to do the video. The cameraman came on, the camera was on the cable there, and we shot the far away video of that. And they edited them both together. The challenge for me, Dana and Judd, for that, they said, we're going to do two takes, no click track. So, hey, Cyndi, your tempo has to be quite the same because we're going to do one take at the sound check and then we're going to do another live, you know, the far away audience and whatever takes during the show. And we're in a truck outside and the tempos have to match up.
No pressure.
Hey, Cyndi, I have a question. How long have drummers been using click tracks? Is that been around for years and years?
It's been around. Well, it became more prominent, I would say, like in the early middle 80s, like around, you know, 81, 82 or whatever. It started happening around the advent of drum machines. Because I did that, those first two Blackjack albums that you see was done in 79 and 80, no click. Into the Night, Benny Mardonis, no click, all recorded live in the studio. The both Pat Travers albums that I did, no click, all recorded live in the studio. So when drum machines came out, then producers got the idea of, like, you know, doing several takes at the same exact tempo. So it creates editing, makes it a lot easier to edit between takes and saves a lot of money. The drum machine doesn't ask for per diem. So that's when it all actually started.
Interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. I learn something on here every day.
Awesome.
But back to the tummy material, the way I love it so much is because, like Judd mentioned, a lot of the music today is kind of like homogenized, it's kind of diluted. You don't hear real drum sounds, you hear samples, you hear computers everywhere. I'm from an age, call me old school, but I like to break sticks when I play. Judd breaks a string, he's got calluses on his fingers. It's nice to play live music, and that will never ever leave me, that passion to play really good, uplifting, fun music on live instruments. And that's what basically attracted me to this project, is because the songs are awesome. They remind me of me watching Ed Sullivan in 1964, February 9th, 1964, when the Beatles were on. And I'm making the great music with awesome people that can play their instruments. And come on, what more does anybody want? What more does it? It's just great.
We're lucky kids, Sandy.
Well, I'm lucky too to be involved in it. And I'm lucky at my age to still be involved in anything.
That's good. Well,
where can our audience find you on the internet?
Well, right now our website is under construction because
everything's happening so quickly,
and also I have no idea how to do any of this stuff, so I don't know.
It's digital downloads are on Bandcamp obviously right now.
Bandcamp, the Tummies.
And
T-U-M-M-I-E-S,
as soon as the website is up, thetummies.com, we will have vinyl and CDs.
Yes,
we
have 270 vinyl units being shipped today as we speak. We have CDs as well. You know, obviously on Feb 26, everything will be available on the streaming services and download that. But the secret is, if you want a little preview, go to Bandcamp.
Yeah.
And also, Judd, there's an Instagram page, correct?
Yes, there is an Instagram page if you want to just follow the tummies. Follow Tummies, and we got some cool pictures up there. Jeff Fasano.
Oh, Jeff Fasano, another great friend of mine. Great friend of mine from New York City, early 90s, mid-90s days. He shot my first album cover. He moved to Nashville like 4 or 5 years ago. And
you guys were pointing out, like, people are coming here.
New Yorkers, everyone's moving to Nashville. So I called him up and I said, "You're the best. Could you shoot the Tummies?" And he agreed to it and came over, and we had just a delicious photo shoot in our house, in our living room. And so all the pictures that are going to be up on the Tummies Instagram and on our website are from Jeff Fasano photography.
Yeah, so Instagram, we have a Facebook page.
Facebook, yeah, I was going to say, I'm just on there. So.
And Bandcamp.
And Bandcamp. I liked it. February 26th, and all of the digital platforms.
I won't object if you want to download the record now, even though it's not officially released.
I downloaded it off Bandcamp and paid for it. So there you go.
I know. I think I got that email today.
I love it. We get the notice when people buy the record. It's so awesome.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to get it. So
now, Alan, is this being recorded, obviously, but can one of us watch it back? Are we going to send us a link, or is there a place where we can watch it tomorrow or whatever? Or
this will go live a week from Thursday. So I believe that's February 4th.
Okay.
Awesome.
And when it goes live, I'll send Judd the link and he can share it out to everyone else. I'll make sure that I put, at the very least, I'll put the link to your Bandcamp in the show description, And I'll try to remember to put the Facebook and the Instagram in there as well.
Yeah, whatever, awesome.
Man. You know, it's, what do I know? I know nothing about this stuff. Tech-wise. Dana just kicked me under the table.
That, you know that's if what you want to hear a quick funny story, this podcast would have never happened had it not been for Alan, and he waited a year for us two monkeys to come back around and go,
we're the same way.
We can't figure out how to get this shit off the ground.
We would love to do it one, but we were not technically smart enough to do anything, you know.
We said, hey, let's meet on Sunday and see what happens. And we met on a Sunday afternoon. We recorded the first one, and 5 years later, here we sit.
200 and something shows.
Sandy Gennaro's daughter, Jerry, we're so not that tech savvy. We invited his daughter, Jerry, to come over to help us set up the Instagram account because we didn't know how to do it. So, yes.
Thank you, Jerry.
Spawn of Sandy.
let's bring Sherry into that. She was 50% of the spawn.
Yes, spawn of Sherry and Sandy. Yes.
That kind of sounds like son of Smilson or son of Smilson. I can't even pronounce it.
One funny just little thing I've been noticing here. I'm watching. I look back and Judd's in the picture. They got albums sitting behind them, and I've got albums sitting here beside me. I know Bill's got a bunch of albums sitting there, and Sandy's albums are all gold and platinum and stuff. Yeah. What's up?
Listen,
I don't have any of those.
There's a lot, people have come down in my studio. Oh. But you still need a ticket to get on the subway. You still need a token. I can bring that thing with five platinum records. Hey, nope, sorry, you still need a ticket.
What is that? What is that one, Sandy?
That's Cindy's 5 million.
Wow.
I saw her open for Rod Stewart 2 summers ago, I think it was a tour.
I went to Bridgestone.
Yeah, I saw it in Indianapolis.
Oh, okay.
I was just. She started before the time set on the ticket, so we missed like the first 2 songs. Oh, no. I was so impressed with how she sounded. It was amazing. I mean, she was really amazing. I really didn't know. I thought she probably lost a little and stuff like that because artists do over time and stuff like that. She sounded amazing. So it was really pretty cool. I was sad I missed the very beginning, but. It was a good show. It was her and Rod Stewart. I mean, can't get much better than that.
Not really. I love that you can see our record albums. You can see them in the dining room.
There's mine over there. You can see
mine
over there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
I got to go. Hey, Sandy, I got to go to record too. It's not mine, though.
No.
You can see it.
Oh, awesome. What did you do to earn that?
He stole it.
Actually, a buddy of mine said, I think you're a bigger Kiss fan than I am, and he gave it to me.
Wow. And what did he do?
Can't go wrong with that.
I'll take it.
Where did he get that?
I don't know.
He stole it.
I'm sure it's probably, just a purchase thing, but
yeah, it's one of those probably.
Yeah. I don't know. It's pretty cool though.
Some dude in his garage is painting records gold and
slapping
them, putting them in glass.
It's not quite that way.
Michael wasn't having them framed.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it's exactly what he's doing.
All right, you guys hang out for a second. I'm going to take us out of here, and then we'll chat for a little bit longer.
Okay.
Folks, don't forget, visit us on 80sofrock.com. Check out past episodes and our social media links. And until next time, peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.